Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Just a note to say that this podcast contains spoilers and some adult themes.
Hell yeah.
And we're live.
Do I make you nervous, Corky?
I'm a homosexual!
Lesbian.
I'm a homosexual.
I have loved you the way they said!
You fancy gears?
I'm having a proper full-on gay crisis.
Hello and welcome to Gay Actually. Thanks for being here. It's gonna be a fun old gay time.
Pitch Perfect is a lesbian musical film.
of course.
I want to carry off badass lesbian chic like Kate Blanchett can.
Welcome. Do I make you nervous, Corky? Hello everyone and welcome back to Gay Actually. We are a series as part of the UK Film Review podcast that discusses all of the LGBTQ plus shenanigans in cinema. My name is Amber and as always I am joined by Joyce.
Hi.
Hey. We also have our own podcast series on Spotify. You can search Gay Actually and find us over there. We just did an episode on Brokeback Mountain, but by the time this episode goes out, we will have done another one. Hop on over there to find out. It's going to be very exciting. We are going to be talking about Heartstopper, the new series, and what that means for young queer teens. But welcome back, Joyce. It feels like it's been ages, first of all, since we've recorded, but it hasn't.
Not really.
It hasn't been that long, and I literally only saw you last week, which is very nice.
Yeah.
We are friends outside of this. We don't just record ourselves speaking. We have real life conversations sometimes. But what did we get up to last week? Because we had quite a time of it, didn't we? In terms of gayness.
Oh yeah. We went to an event called Queer Diary. You might have heard of it. It's an event where queer people come together and read from their childhood diaries or even like fan fiction, other things they wrote.
Random text messages.
Oh, that was good.
School homework sometimes.
Yeah.
It's just whatever comes to mind in your gay heart.
Yeah.
It happens. Shout out to Beth, who does Queer Diary. I hadn't been before, you hadn't been before.
No, first time.
We had a fabulous time. Oh my god. Stella's under there and she bit my foot.
That
scared me so much.
Well,
that really scared me. I just felt a gentle claw press into my foot.
And that really scared me.
Where is she? I literally don't know where she is. Anyway, I'm going to protect my feet
from
the demon.
So
no, it didn't hurt, it just scared the out of me. Anyway. Anyway, Queer Diary, really fun event. If you're in East London, in the Brick Lane area, they're on Instagram, you can check them out.
They're doing a bit of a tour of the UK right now.
They are. If you're going to Margate, they're going to random places. I think they're going to Fringe as well. So if anyone's in Fringe, I mean, by the time this comes out,
this will all be over.
This will all be irrelevant, I'm realising. But they are doing a Queer Diary in September. So if you're in London, check them out. We will probably be at the next one, so come and say hello as well. Yeah, good times. It's good gay times. Joyce, did you have a queer diary?
No, I was... This is really, like, sad to admit. But I'm such a perfectionist when it comes to stuff like that, that I started so many diaries and I would write, like, a page and be like, no, this isn't right. This isn't perfect.
You would, like, perfect yourself, censor yourself.
Which is really sad because it would be so nice now to be able to look back on how I was thinking when I was younger, which is obviously different. Like, I know that, but I don't have physical proof of it, which is sad.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't have a queer diary. My queer diary was Tumblr.
Oh my God. Yeah. A lot of people in that room last week felt that.
Yes.
Felt that strongly.
Yeah. Just for context, and I might have said this before on the podcast, but I did have a Pitch Perfect Tumblr account.
Of course you did. Literally, it's in our intro. Pitch Perfect is a lesbian musical film.
It is.
And my reaction to that.
I will die on that hill.
Yeah. Also in our intro is Do I Make You Nervous, Corky? In case no one knows what we're going to be talking about this episode, if you've not read the title. I did have a queer diary I had one before in 2014, which I burnt post-GCSEs because I was embarrassed because it detailed some things that I was embarrassed by. And that's a shame because I would have loved to read back on that and be like, baby girl, you're going to be fine. You're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
But I have one from the years 2015 to 2019. So when I was like 16, 17 to about 21, I just turned 21 when I stopped writing in it. So it has everything.
How does it feel reading back through it?
So I was a bit shy. I wasn't sure about doing Queer Diary. Someone might twist my arm in the future and I might do it, but probably not. But still support it though. But I did read back through it with my girlfriend, who I hadn't shown it before. And it had some of our, like, we've been together a long time. It had some of our first dates, had some of our first conversations, like, written down. I had, like, swathes of, like, inner gay panic, weighing up lots of different things. I was very anxious. And, like, my coming out to my parents, which was very interesting to read back now. So obviously my parents, like, I got very lucky, like, they're very great, but it was interesting reading, like, my thought process at the time. Very personal and very raw, so it was interesting.
Yeah,
it was interesting. But yeah, but anyway, do I make you nervous, Corky?
Maybe just thirsty. Maybe curious.
Maybe, Corky.
I'm feeling a bit curious myself. What are we talking about today, Amber?
Well, Joyce, I'm so pleased you asked. Today we are talking about the incredible film Bound, which is so entrenched into queer lore.
Yeah.
Like, people be sleeping on this film. Like, damn. But then also, most lesbians probably aren't, because, girl.
I don't know, because
I can't gauge it.
I watched it for the first time 2 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
This wasn't a film that was part of my growing up queer, about exploring my queerness at all.
Same here.
I don't think I was aware of it. I think I learned about this film at university by reading about queer film when I was writing an essay on queer, well, lesbian cinema specifically.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. I think the reason I know about the film is because I saw Susie Bright in a documentary about LGBT cinema, and she's always been very prominent in lesbian cinema more generally. And she was brought on to assist with the film Bound to ensure, like, the authenticity of the lesbian characters. It makes such a difference. So I was kind of aware of the film in my periphery, and I knew that it was significant in lesbian cinema, but I hadn't seen it. Wachowski sisters hired Susie Bright for lesbian authenticity, which, fun fact, is why in the film you will see a focus on hands and what hands are doing.
hands are great.
So it's another example of how this film was intended for a lesbian audience. It was a genre first film. It was kind of a noir inspired thriller, if you will, with gangsters and gunfire, but its intended audience is lesbians. Like, hands down.
And it feels like it. It doesn't feel like it's for a straight audience at all.
That's why I didn't watch the film before, because I thought mid-90s, we're going to be seeing what we were used to seeing during that time. This film comes in the midst of the queer villain on screen. We're at the end of the 20th century. We've just had Silence of the Lambs. We've had Cruising 15 years earlier. Kind of, it's well established that the queer on screen is violent, is murderous, is aggressive, is psychotic. Don't at me like that. So this film is kind of born out of that, and what the Wachowski sisters do so well is subvert that stereotype of the queer villain and establish it within a lesbian context, which is awesome. And it is awesome.
Yes.
Queer characters, finally. Well, I use the word queer, but I think it's important to use the word lesbian in this context.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the history that we're talking about. Lesbian characters that a viewer can sympathise with. A mainstream viewer. This is one of the first examples, which I didn't realise, it's one of the first examples of sympathetic lesbian representation on screen.
Yeah.
Props.
My
fun fact that I said to Joyce before we started recording that I had a fun fact. Here it is. So the Wachowski sisters pitched to Warner Brothers two scripts. One of them was Bound, and the other was a little film, you might have heard of it, The Matrix.
Mm-hmm. I have heard of it.
I thought I was really funny doing that. Obviously, everyone's heard of The Matrix. I was just being a sarky little
bitch. Oh, it's like this minor indie production.
You might not know it. It's really niche. It's not mainstream at all. Really indie.
Didn't even get a cinema release.
So they pitched Bound and The Matrix simultaneously to Warner Brothers. And Warner Brothers were like, we're not sure. We're not sure on the genre. Like, we don't really know. Tell you what, we'll let you make Bound first. If Bound does well, then you can make The Matrix. And Bound did really well.
Clearly, because we have a film called The Matrix now.
We have a generation of The Matrix. The Matrix is one of the most... I don't need to tell you or anyone listening. The Matrix is one of the most groundbreaking films as cinema moved into the 21st century. But the cool thing about it is that you see a lot of similar stylistic traits in Bound.
Yeah.
Like the kind of noir style, the kind of...
The camera angles.
The 360 camera turn that The Matrix... Basically, Bound walked so The Matrix could run.
Yeah.
A lot of those ideas are in very early form in Bound. So just from a cinematic perspective, it's very, very cool. Also, the sense of unease that both films convey is really interesting with the camera angles and also the focus on black and white and then like little pops of colour. So in Bound, there's lots of red, like mostly in costume.
Violet's lipstick.
Yeah, I was going to say, Violet's lipstick, one of Violet's dresses.
Blood.
Blood. I gave you a spoiler warning. And just random like white paint or like, yeah, just random pops of color. And
even
it's
on
the same
the
with
poster.
The Matrix.
Like if you look at the poster for Bound,
yeah,
it's very, it has that style that's quite outdated now.
Because there's lots of black and white and then just little moments. And in that way, it really takes influence from noir films, I feel like. Because it feels like you're watching something earlier.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Look up the posters and you'll see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Also, in addition to noir, I'm just going through the themes before we get into the plot, just because I think right off the bat, it's good to establish. But the femme fatale character, in connection with the noir, so when you think of the femme fatale character, stereotypically, what comes to mind for you?
Red lipstick. Okay. High heels.
Okay. Maybe less gay.
Oh. Oops.
I mean, sorry.
Sexy. is that less gay?
I'm here for it. This is gay actually, after all.
Yeah.
So, yes, all of the above, but also needs to be saved.
Also, in that way.
A lot of, oh my god! A lot of, like, panic, and, like, always dies. Well, typically dies. And when you think of Bound, not true. Because the femme fatale is the character that usually dies first. In Bound, we look at the femme fatale and we're like, yeah. We actually like and root for the femme fatale, which is really interesting.
And yeah.
Joyce is just like, lipstick. So anyway.
I just had a picture of Violet in my head as we were talking about this, and goddamn, that woman. Sorry.
She is gorgeous.
We'll get into this.
We can get into it. Those are my themes.
When she walks in the elevator,
let's unpack that. Okay, so the start of the film...
Wait, should I give my fun facts before we get into
the plot? Oh, please do. Yes, please do.
But the thing is, I really quickly tried to look up the exact numbers, but I remember reading this in an essay, like an academic essay, when I was writing an essay on lesbian cinema around that time period. And I can't find it right now, but trust my word on this. I read that the film's budget was basically cut in half by the producers because they didn't want lesbian characters. So the film was originally pitched as straight characters. Oh. Or maybe not originally pitched, but Warner Brothers tried to convince the directors to have a straight couple at the center.
Which happened a
lot. And they insisted on having lesbians. And then
queens.
It was basically choosing between lesbians with half the budget or straight couple with the full budget. And they just committed.
Oh, love.
They stay true.
But then also, the film did so well.
Yeah, so.
It was a mainstream success. It's not just like your casual 90s, like, another example of... I'm trying to think of something that came out around the same time that was lesbian.
When did Personal Best come out?
Oh my god! We need to review Personal Best.
When did that come out?
I don't know.
Oh, that's way older. Never mind.
Oh, okay.
What came out? Okay, well...
But I'm a Cheerleader was 99, so yeah, a bit after.
Turn of the Century, you have Kissing Jessica Stein. That's like 2001. Lost and Delirious.
Malfunctioning. But you get our point. It was good. And it allowed... The Wachowski sisters' commercial success. They were allowed to make The Matrix, and then they popped off. So, absolute icons. Should we get into it?
Oh, please.
I'll give a little summary before you jump into that first scene, because I am really anxious to know your thoughts, because I was shooketh. So Violet is with Caesar, but then she starts having an affair with Corky, who is this incredible butch lesbian who's just come out of prison.
Sexy.
I know.
She has so many piercings in her ear. I just love it.
Oh my god. They start having an affair. It's hot. It's illicit. It's forbidden. We love it. Also, they're both canonically gay. Corky doesn't turn Violet. Violet is...
a closeted lesbian.
Yeah, hands down. She's just doing what she needs to do to survive. So, they hatch a plan to dump Caesar once and for all, which involves... they plan to rob $2 million of stashed mob cash from the mafia group that Caesar's in, and they plan to blame Caesar for it.
Iconic.
And that is the plot. Gangster, noir, lesbians.
Mafia, Chicago.
Lesbians.
Yes!
So, talk to me about the opening scene. Set the scene for the viewers, some of whom may have seen Bound, some of whom, if you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It's an hour and a half. It's free on Amazon Prime with ads. And the ads are like 2 seconds long. And there's only like three halfway through.
Thank you so much for that summary of the Amazon Prime version of Bound. Bound opens with the hottest meet cute ever. Like, it makes... I just gay panic when I see this. And, like...
Okay. I lost my mind. Like, yeah. I don't really react to films like that anymore, but I literally was there, like...
Yeah, jaw drop. I have to look this up on YouTube 20 times after I finish the film. Yes.
So you are the narrative that the lesbians crave.
Corky just came out of prison, and she basically got this place in an apartment through a guy, you know, that knows a guy that knows a guy.
She's, like, doing the place up, isn't she?
Yeah, and she gets to live there in the meantime. She's very good with her hands, as we'll discover later.
As I say, Susie Bright ensured that the film focused on hands.
Oh, yeah.
For that reason, what are hands doing? Hands movements, you know, she's doing a lot of plumbing.
So hot. So Corky walks into the building, goes into the elevator, gets stopped by Violet, who shouts, "Hold the elevator." And she walks in with her boyfriend, Caesar. Now... how to describe this elevator scene? Caesar is just facing the door, doesn't pay attention. Violet's hanging back against the back of the elevator, and Corky and Violet make this eye contact.
And lesbians will know that the first eye contact is very important. The lesbian nod, if you will. That silent acknowledgement that we're all thinking the same thing.
Like, staring into each other's souls.
Okay.
Like, this is not a glance, okay? I see you. I see you. Yeah.
And it's so relatable. It happens all the time. It's not necessarily in a sexual way. Sometimes you just see another queer person on the street, and you just, you know... There you go.
This, however, incredibly sexual.
Yes.
The most erotic stare I've ever seen in my life.
Violet looks at Corky like she's a whole damn meal.
Oh my god.
And Corky's like, okay, mama.
Now, let's describe Violet. Short hair, curly, like, hot, right? Like, cat eye glasses, bright red lipstick, wearing a skirt, leather.
Femme fatale.
With tights and heels.
Lipstick lesbian. Corky, on the other hand. Hey, mama?
Don't say such atrocious things about Corky, please.
No, I love Corky.
Yeah. She's just wearing, like, a tank top, very loose-fitting clothing.
Leather jacket.
Yeah.
Oh, the white tank in lesbian film is canon.
Yeah, it is.
It's hot. So ingrained into lore.
Yeah. Also, you know, a lot of tattoos, lots of piercings. Like,
yeah, and the tattoo on her right shoulder is a symbol of the matriarchy.
Oh, that's so gay and so hot. This is going to be so hard for me to get through because I can't produce words because
I'm
feeling really hot right now.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry. Anyway. Relax. Violet and Caesar arrive at their floor. And they walk out of the elevator, and we see this shot from Violet walking away. Just her ass, legs, and heels walking down the hallway.
Yeah.
And we can kind of get the impression that that's Corky's perspective, right?
Oh, 100%.
Like, it looks like, okay, Corky's looking at this right now.
That's interesting, though, because it's like one of the only scenes from Corky's perspective, because I feel like the first... 10-ish minutes of the film are from her perspective, and then the rest of it's kind of from Violet's, which is very interesting.
I think they kind of merge into one.
Yeah.
Which is, like, very powerful, for sure. But you're
when
right.
When to become one.
The arts to merge.
I went Spice Girls. You went lesbian urge to merge. Where's the U-Haul?
Oh my god.
Anyway.
Yeah, so...
What's next, Joyce?
Well, Corky is just excited. What's next?
She's been in prison for 5 years, to be fair.
With a lot of women.
And
let's
she
be
says
real.
It, she goes to a bar, and the barmaid's like, well, welcome back. And you're like, oh, okay.
Lesbian bar, by the way. Everyone looks so gay.
Everyone also looks at Corky and is like,
Is the next scene when they...
Do meet? I make you nervous, Corky?
Is that the next scene?
Yeah, well, go for it.
Okay.
Also, there's a whole scene of dialogue where they're talking about... Like, Violet's, like, talking about, like, Corky, and she's not saying it, but she's basically suggesting through what she's saying that she's got Corky all figured out, she knows she's gay, and there's one bit where she's like, where she talks about Corky's car, and Corky's like, I've got a truck. And then Violet goes, truck, of course.
Yeah.
She's got this old, like, Hummer. Not a Hummer, that's a Jeep.
Like a Chevy something.
Yes,
Chevy truck.
That's it. Yep.
She's like, I bet you got an old car. Yeah, a truck. And a 69 Chevy.
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
She's like, ah.
Yeah.
It's great. It's excellent. Which, once again, like, this is kind of like this subtle hint at Violet being queer, being gay, being part of this culture.
Yeah, I don't even think it's that subtle.
No, but it's not subtle at all.
She's like, yeah, you got a Chevy.
She just knows. Yeah. She just knows
the
culture.
She just knows that Corky is just screaming lesbian.
Exactly.
So,
basically, we see Corky working in the apartment she's staying at, right? Plumbing, all of that nasty stuff. It's pretty disgusting, I'm not gonna lie. And then
she looks so good doing it.
A knock on the door.
Why are you reenacting this right now?
I just live and breathe this film.
Go on.
Corky opens the door. Who's there? Violet! Looking hot as ever with two cups of coffee. Black for Corky, she guessed right.
I'm speechless.
I love it. They get to talking. Violet has this voice. Can you even reenact it?
Oh, Corky. Do I make you nervous, Corky?
I mean, I listen to it every time I edit these f***ing episodes. Oh, yeah. But
a truck, of course.
It's like, she's not... I mean, the actress is known for her nasally voice. It's very distinctive.
Yeah.
I dropped my earring down the sink. Could you retrieve it for me?
It's so good. So Corky goes over to her apartment, helps her out. This is constant flirting. Like, they do not take a break.
So this is the thing. They're both... So usually in these types of films, Corky would... I thought, okay, Corky is the confident mask lesbian. Violet is the timid femme lipstick lesbian that needs, quote-unquote, saving. Not true. Not true at all. They are both confident and pretty much very outspoken about their sexuality. Violet literally pounces on Corky. She knows what she wants. Corky's like, hey, I'm just here for the ride, baby.
Yeah, Violet's in charge.
And you're not sure about either of their motivations throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you love it anyway?
Oh, yeah.
Because they're so self-assured in themselves the whole time. That doesn't change. And that's what the Wachowski sisters do so well. In establishing their female characters.
Hmm.
I love looking at this through a gender lens as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because it's
And The
very
Matrix
different.
As well. Yeah, it's very interesting to consider their films through not just the language, not just through a lens of sexuality, but also gender.
Yeah, this is actually one of the rare examples, I would say, of a film having super interesting female characters, but where the men are also interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like Caesar, very interesting
character.
Everyone's
very multidimensional, yeah.
Yeah, but the women still take the forefront, even if the men are also interesting. Because with a lot of films that are like maybe lesbian films, the men, I just write them off right away. I don't care.
Bechdel test, tick.
Yeah. Like, I just don't... Like, for example, in Kissing Jessica Stein, I bring this up because it's from the same kind of period. The men in there, I just literally could not care less. Like, get them off my screen.
No.
But in Bound, I'm still invested in Caesar's story.
Oh, definitely.
Right? But I still... Like, it's very clear that the women take the forefront.
Yeah.
And they're in the center of everything. And this is what's so great about this film, is that women can be super interesting characters,
mm-hmm.
be the main characters, and the men can still be interesting as well.
Yes! So
like,
true.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, totally.
That's rare. And that makes excellent
better.
Writing.
Yeah.
And
they're just so freaking clever. I mean, I don't need to tell anyone that they're so freaking clever, but you can literally see it in their early work. This is some of their earliest stuff.
Yeah.
And you can see it so clearly, like, how much thought they've put into everything and making sure that everyone is multidimensional and expressive, and you sympathise for them all.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fab.
It's fab. Violet lost her earring. Or did she? Corky's coming over. The constant flirting. It's insane.
Uh-huh.
Like, the tension. It's just everything that comes out of their mouths is just...
innuendo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, do you want to talk through the couch scene? I don't think I can actually physically do this.
I have a note that says in all caps, sex warning. with exclamation points. And I think that was just for me to ensure that I make sure that this podcast has a content warning for adult themes. Wow. the couch scene. I don't even know if I can begin to explain it.
Yeah.
But Violet is the aggressor. Oh, that's not the right word.
She takes the initiative.
She takes the initiative. She has the upper hand. She's in control. She knows how to seduce. She enjoys seducing.
She's so seductive.
She literally says, "I'm trying to seduce you." And Corky's like, "Okay." Like, really flips the stereotype on its head.
Yeah. So direct. I love it. Because it works so well.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hot when she says that. You're like, okay. The confidence.
Honestly. Girl. And then, you know, it kind of gets a bit sensual. And then they're interrupted by Caesar. He comes home. And he goes, "Oh my God,
we're skipping over the details of the couch scene."
Okay, you do it. And then I'll talk about that. Because, yeah.
Please. I'll keep it PG, but let's talk through the couch scene.
Talk to me.
So, obviously, they're having the little talk. Corky is like, "What are you doing? I'm trying to seduce you." Actually, before that. Okay, wait, scrap.
Wait.
Talking about tattoos. Violet points out a tattoo on Corky's arm. What is it called?
I can't remember what it's called, but it's a symbol of the matriarchy.
Yeah, that.
So it's gay.
Corky's like, "I'm surprised you know what that is." Violet says, "I actually have a tattoo myself. Do you want to see it?" It's on her boob.
But she's like, first of all, I was crying because she said it took them all day to do it. And it's the tiniest f***ing flower.
And she promised it wouldn't hurt.
But it did.
It was so sore. Now I love the way it feels. Corky's like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "I'm seduce you." And then...
And Corky's like, "Oh, okay."
Violet literally... You might have to cut this out. We'll see. Violet literally... and places it... And then Caesar walks in.
And then... Okay, so Caesar walks in. He's like, "Oh my God! Oh my God!" I can't do a Chicago accent very well. Sorry. But he comes in and is like, What is this? Gets really, really angry and aggressive. And Violet's like, "Caesar, what are you doing?" So I don't know.
Keep doing that accent. I love it.
"Caesar, no." No, I can't do it.
No.
I've lost it. No, please. I don't want to get Miranda Sings with it. All aboard!
The toxic gossip train.
How foul is that woman? Just a side note.
Disgusting.
Anyway, so Corky turns around and Caesar's like, "Oh." Because he thought Corky was a guy, which is why he reacted so strongly. Second he realizes Corky's a woman, he's like, "Oh, cool, here's some money."
Yeah.
Like, for
retrieving the earring.
Yeah, how long were you inside? Like, understands her struggle as an ex-con. Like, it's really nice, gives her money. And I think that's really interesting because he doesn't see Corky as a threat. Joke's on him. Jokes on him, gully girl. But I think that's interesting as all of a sudden he's like, "Oh."
Yeah. Obviously what happens when he walks in is that they're kind of getting dressed really fast and he doesn't really see anything. Like, they're pretty much completely dressed and fine by the time, but obviously he sees the back of a quote unquote man.
And he's like, "What?"
And Violet getting up from the couch.
Yeah.
So he gets kind of the hint, right? But once he sees it's a woman, it's like, "Oh, yeah, no, nothing." Mm-hmm. Like, if he caught them in the act, obviously it would have been different. But there wasn't much to see.
Yeah.
But he just thought, you know, there's a man on my woman's couch.
Yeah. And then we kind of cut a little bit. I've got a quote written down is where they're talking. I think they're in Corky's truck, of course. And they're having a conversation and Corky says, "I can't stand a woman apologizing for wanting sex." And I was like, yes.
Because this
is so... This is something film still struggles with, is that it's okay to have a woman who wants to be desired, who wants to desire. And for a film like Bound to express that so explicitly is iconic. I feel like I'm saying nothing new because all of the lesbians are screaming like, yes, we know.
Yeah,
but it's so true.
It's so true. And this idea even of women wanting and desiring sex and deserving pleasure and all that.
It was rare at the time.
It's still a new idea now, mm-hmm. even. Like, I feel like when I was growing up, that was still pretty much taboo. And it's only in the last few years where that's become kind of like, okay, we're talking about this now. But this was in 1996.
Oh, honestly,
explicitly
iconic.
Said by a queer character.
Yeah.
On film. Like, that's crazy. This film is so ahead of its time. Like, it's just unbelievable.
It's so transgressive.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And to look at that through a queer lens as well, is that to just see, I think I said it earlier, but Violet actually reciprocating both, it's two-sided.
Yeah.
Because in lesbian films, so often you have, like, the aggressor and the one that is quote-unquote turned or, like, has an awakening. That's not happening here. They both knew what they wanted and they both got it.
Yeah.
And
the person that you would stereotypically, like you say, think that would go for it is the one that got approached.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
It just subverts all your ideas of what a lesbian is supposed to look like. And at this time, like you said, when cinema is not representing lesbians in any good light, this is so revolutionary.
Oh, I wish I'd seen it sooner. I wish I'd seen it sooner because I think as, sexuality aside, I think as women, we are really just thrown media and images to just be like, no, you're not allowed to express your desires, like, in any context.
Mm.
No, it's not about what you want. You have to be accommodating. You have to do X, Y, Z. A film like this, if I'd seen that at, like, 18, 19, because it is an 18, just so everyone knows. Seen that at, like, 19, I think it would have really...
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Helped.
Yeah.
There's no shame and there's, you know, it's important to see women on screen like that. Confident, self-assured, sexual, but not sexualized.
Amen.
Oh!
Well said.
Yeah, I wish I'd seen it sooner. I really
see,
do.
This is.
I slept on Bound and I'm really sad about it.
You've said this multiple times now in this episode, but you just assume that everyone has seen it, but we both saw it super late.
Yeah, my girlfriend hadn't seen it either.
Exactly. So I think we can assume that a lot of people haven't seen it. It's not a very known lesbian film.
Yeah, and we do have some straight listeners. Shout out to you guys, OG allies. But I'm assuming that some of you guys won't have seen it either.
So yeah, watch it.
Also, if you like The Matrix, you'll like Bound. Like, if you want to see where The Matrix came from, I think Bound is a really good stylistic example.
Yeah.
Same people.
Mm. If you like The Godfather, this is like The Godmother.
True. Silence of the Lambs.
But without the cannibalism.
Sorry, that little laugh you did.
I'm obsessed. I'm so red. I'm like sweating from the passion I'm feeling.
Oh my lord.
Really quickly back to the truck scene because I just forgot something.
Go for it, honey.
So you know that Corky tells Violet not to apologize for wanting sex.
Yes.
And Violet replies saying, I'm not apologizing for wanting sex. I'm apologizing for the way Caesar behaved. So she's just like...
Violet subverts.
Yeah, she's right there with Corky. Mm. Like, they both know what's up. But Violet just
and
as much.
And even Corky assumes that Violet's going to be like, oh my god.
I know.
But Violet's like, I wanted it.
That was a good accent. That was really realistic.
I wanted it. But we should maybe talk about the mafia or the mob or whatever the hell they're called. Yeah. So the Caesar. Cesare.
That's what Gina calls him.
Cesare. Sorry.
It's like this big Italian mob guy.
Sorry to our Italian listeners. You know who you are. Anyway. So
it's
Caesar.
Okay, yeah.
So Caesar. Caesar is like your typical gangster.
That was very New York.
Oh yeah, I tried to go more Chicago.
Chicago.
So we've got Caesar. And we've got Gino, who's like the big boss that Caesar
needs to... The godfather.
He is the godfather. Who Caesar needs to give the $2 million to.
How did he get the $2 million?
Unconfirmed.
Okay.
Or is it confirmed? And I
no,
just went over my
it's
head.
Definitely unconfirmed, but there was a scene where basically this guy's head got blown off by one of Caesar's associates named Johnny, who is the son of Gino.
Mm-hmm.
And Caesar hates Johnny with a passion. Oh, he's like an awful little psychopath running around with guns,
also,
shooting
he's obsessed with Violet, but like in a creepy way.
With violence and with violence.
Yes!
Just, thank you. I'm so honored.
So we've got Gino and his son Johnny, who's an asshole. And then we've got Caesar, who has to give the money to Gino and Johnny. And
yeah,
then we also have...
Basically, just quickly for the context, before we get lost, because I need this for myself.
Okay.
They were in Caesar's apartment when they got the money of one of the other associates. I think he was basically hiding the money for himself. $2 million that flew everywhere full of blood.
Yes.
Caesar, because it was his apartment, was in charge of this money. He washed it. He ironed every bill, counted it, put it in a briefcase.
Yeah, that was weird, that bit.
Obsessive. Here's where you get a sense of his character. He's a bit crazy, but obsessive.
But he's also scared of, like, being shot,
and terrified,
basically.
Yes.
Yeah, they're all... Their motivations, which, again, is a really interesting take on masculinity. Their motivation is money and power, but also fear. And you can see Caesar's anxieties proliferate throughout the film, which is interesting because you never really see men like that.
And it's so good. Even with Violet, because everyone is obsessed with Violet. Gino's obsessed with Violet.
Yes.
The other guy.
But then there's also
his name.
Well, I was going to talk about
Mickey.
Mick. Yeah. Mick is another character that I thought was really interesting because he's also obsessed with Violet, but it's not in the same way as the other men. It's not in a sexual way. He feels somewhat... It works to Violet's advantage because he feels protective of her, and like when they're killing this man, Caesar's like, oh no, baby, I want you to stay here. And then Mick's like, no, Violet, go and take a walk. Like, you don't need to be seeing this.
I'll take care of Caesar.
Yeah, this isn't your business. So like right off the bat, like he kind of establishes himself as a father figure to Violet, which...
A bit incestuous, sure, but yes.
Yeah, but it worked. Like, he doesn't have the same, like, sexual longing for her that the other guys do.
It's a lot deeper than
It's a lot deeper. He feels responsibility, almost. Yeah. Which, I mean, Violet's like, I can use this, which is great.
So this money is in Caesar's apartment. The day after the whole... Is it day or is it weeks?
Who knows?
Sometime after the point is for Gino to come with a few associates, with his son Johnny, for example, to come pick up this money, right? So basically, this is the thing. There's this large amount of money in Caesar's apartment.
God, this film really keeps you guessing, doesn't it?
It's an excellent mob film, like aside from the lesbians.
Because I'm never clear on who's... what like what motivation people have. I don't know anyone's motivation. I don't know what's gonna happen, especially Corky and Violet, because I still, until the last moment, was like, these two are gonna screw each other over. One of them's gonna screw the other over.
Oh,
it's gonna be bad. And there are there are moments throughout the film where you're like, oh my god, she's gonna leave her.
I have blind faith in these lesbians, I'm not gonna lie.
Well,
I think they're...
I'm just used to
hotness.
Being disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm just used to, like, you know, I assume it was a film from a certain time, and I made an assumption that, you know, one of the characters was gonna die, get arrested, get turned by a man. You know, that's how it goes. So I was really pleasantly surprised when actually, no, They're on an equal playing field the entire time. They're helping each other. That doesn't change. And it was really nice.
Yeah.
Are there any films that take lead from Bound?
That's a good question.
I don't think there's been another one like Bound that springs to mind.
Especially in the 2000s. No. Like
the 2000s regressed.
Oh, it was horrible. Horrible time for lesbians in cinema. Yeah.
Bound offered like a glimmer of hope, but I'm a cheerleader, oh my god. And then, apart from Imagine Me and You, and then a couple of other really niche ones like I Can't Think Straight.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, what? What's happening?
Yeah, just a complete change in culture.
Mm.
Just for women in general, not just for lesbians.
Yeah.
But it affected how the lesbian was portrayed, which is like, we've already said this so many times at this point, but this is just excellent representation. Even now, so few films that actually get to this level.
I want to know where, if anyone has any examples of films that you know were inspired by Bound in the mainstream. Because there are a lot of really incredible indie films that do well to represent lesbians and queer women. But if you have anything in the mainstream that does what Bound does, let us know. Yeah. We will review it because I want to see it.
This is why they should have made Charlie's Angels gay.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir, girl. They had their chance and they blew it.
They can make a third one. Listen up, guys.
Charlie's Angels.
So, where are we at this point?
Good question.
When do Corky and Violet... Okay, there are a few things that happen before the plan gets made, right?
Yeah.
So, there's a fight. There's a few sex scenes between Corky and Violet, which, by the way... Also, it's...
caught me as I was drinking.
It caught me off guard when Violet took charge. That, you know, you wouldn't think that. You would think Corky's the...
Again, subverting my expectations.
Violet's not the helpless woman.
Very pleasantly surprised.
Me too. Like...
Nice.
Very nice. That was... I will say...
In a 90s film?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very Desert Hearts.
Oh.
Also...
But in Desert Hearts, who takes charge?
Also Thelma and Louise, but... Mm.
Well, that's gay anyway. Mm-hmm. We just don't see
There's another film where Susan Sarandon plays a lesbian and gets naked at some point. I can't remember the name of it.
I must have seen it. There's just no way I haven't.
There's just no way.
I am basically in love with Susan Sarandon.
She's such an ally.
And she's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And she is an ally. She's great. She's such a lefty communist. I love her.
Big love for Susan Sarandon. Maybe we'll review one of her queer films at some point.
Yeah, we should do a Susan Sarandon special. Also talk about Thelma and Louise.
Susan Sarandon special. Yes. Okay. We are doing that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I'll put it on the schedule.
Good. Schedule Susan Sarandon special. Okay, so... we have a few sex scenes. There's one thing I need to note is that I had faith in their connection from the start. Like, that feels... This is why I trusted it so much, I think, is because I could feel their trust for each other and their...
Right off the bat bond, as well.
Right off the bat, I could feel it. Mm-hmm. So this is why I had faith in them to the end. There's one scene where Corky, because the walls are thin, hears Caesar and Violet getting it on.
I was gonna say getting it L1 on.
Corky obviously upset.
I'm back. I just fell.
And then they have sex, and after they have sex, Corky, it brings up why she's upset. Violet is saying, I dreamt of like feeling you.
It was really quite
and Corky's super unresponsive, and then Violet is kind of like, okay, what's wrong? Corky is, I heard you have sex with a man, so what are you? Are you just pretending, whatever, like stuff like that? And Violet, she's not even necessarily defensive. She's just so great. She's just like, that is work. I do what I have to do to stay safe. That is work. I am a bleep word.
Yeah.
Lesbian. And that's it. They part ways. Violet is upset at Corky's reaction, but she just decides to leave it alone for now. So they do have this little quarrel between them. about Viola obviously having a man
that's
in her life.
The only point of contention.
Yeah.
Because Corky just thinks, oh, she's just going to use me and go back to her man.
Yeah.
Which would happen in a film like this. But Violet's like, hell no.
Hell no.
I love women.
So they get back together after, not get back together, but they meet up again after that. And then the money. Let's talk about the money.
Let's talk about the money. It's very interesting because they hatch a plan to get the money and run off with it and screw Caesar over.
Yep.
But what is interesting is how they start to psychoanalyze how they think the men will react. They think they've got these men all figured out. They think they're single-dimensional, like, here's what's going to happen. We're going to do this, and then we're going to do that. I can't even remember what the plan was.
I think the plan was, so for... Okay. This was the plan.
Okay. This is their plan.
This is their plan. Or do you want to finish your sentence first? And
no, I was basically just going to say, like, they think they've got these men all figured out.
Yeah.
They think they've got them down. But you can't predict human behaviour. And that's what this film does so well, is it subverts all expectation, even of the characters.
Yeah. So the original plan is pretty straightforward, and it seems waterproof. Like, I thought, oh, this is great. Like, nothing can go wrong. Caesar is going to be taking a shower the morning that the mob boss is going to come collect the money, right? The boss likes one type of liquor, this specific type of whiskey. Violet's going to drop that bottle while Caesar's in the shower. She's going to say to Caesar, I'm so sorry. I'm going to run out. I'm going to go buy a new one. Super quick. I'll be right back. While she opens the door, Corky's going to slip in. She's going to take the money. Obviously, Violet has the key because Caesar's in the shower and Caesar trusts Violet because he thinks she has no agency whatsoever, obviously, because she's a helpless woman.
A heterosexual.
Yeah.
He doesn't know about Corky yet.
Of course. Corky's going to take the money. She's going to hide it in her apartment. Then Caesar is going to check the suitcase. Oh, wait. Oh, Violet's going to pretend like she saw Johnny arriving while Caesar was in a shower.
Yeah.
Then Caesar's going to freak out. He's going to check the briefcase. The money's going to be gone. He's going to blame it on Johnny. But he's going to know that they're going to blame it on him. So he's going to run away.
So, up until this point, all of that works. He fully believes that Johnny slipped in whilst Violet was out, took the money and ran.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the money is next door with Corky and she's put it in bags in paint cans.
Yeah.
So no one would suspect a thing. However, Caesar doesn't do what they predict him to do. He doesn't run.
Yeah. Instead.
Instead, we get the next half hour of the film, which, I mean, where do we start?
Caesar is bat crazy.
It's like something awakens in him. They just assume that he's going to be like, oh, I need to just run, like, I'm going to die. But then he's like, no. Johnny screwed me over and he's going to freaking pay. And then they're like, the hell? We didn't plan for this.
No, and then Corky even communicates to Violet while she can steal a moment away to be on the phone.
Mm.
Communicates to Violet, just tell him you're going to leave him because this is too much for you. Yeah. And then Violet tries that, but Caesar just won't let her. Like, he turns into a feral animal.
She's trapped. She's fully trapped in there.
Yeah.
And it's no fault of her own. Like, she literally is like, you're scared. Like, I need to go. I don't want any part of this.
Yeah.
And Caesar's like, no.
No.
You're staying right here.
Caesar's ready to shoot her.
And then, as planned, Gino, Johnny turn up for the money. They have a little chat. What is predicted, Mickey's like, yeah, they'll have a 5-minute chat, grab the case and go. But then Caesar screws himself and he's like, why don't we have a look in the case? Because he fully believes that Johnny took it. Because he hates him that much. And then chaos ensues. And basically, what happens is Caesar ends up killing Gino and Johnny and their bodyguard.
Literally the boss of the mob.
The head of the mob. The godfather. Shoots him dead and then shoots his son. Neither of them did what he said. But, yeah. What?
Yeah, like, Caesar goes crazy. Like, they literally go to Johnny's apartment even before Gino arrives. Mm-hmm. Go to Johnny's apartment, like take it apart, and you can see Caesar losing his mind. He's literally like, I'm Johnny. I hate Caesar. Where did I hide the money?
Like, he's literally like Clockwork Orange, isn't it?
Yes, he's going crazy.
Just slowly unravels.
And then he calls Mickey. He has this whole plan of calling Mickey and saying that Gino never showed up. Yeah. He must have been in a car accident, whatever. Then Mickey comes in all in a big panic, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just so much is going on, and we're just sitting here like, okay, the plan that Corky and Violet made is not working out, but now it's so unpredictable. Like, anything could happen, because anyone Caesar is bat crazy.
Yeah, anyone could win or lose. Anyone could die at any minute. Yeah. Because then that's what happens, is Caesar finds out about Violet and Corky because he sees them on the phone.
Yeah.
That bit's chilling when he does redial. And I don't know, I was literally screaming at the screen, like, unplug the phone!
Me too!
Unplug the phone! Because so he can hear it through the freaking wall.
There's a really cool shot where we see, so Violet's on the phone, we see the camera pan over the wall.
Yes.
So Corky in the other apartment.
And their hands are both on the wall.
Yeah, so they're basically on the other side of the wall, the same wall. And then Corky obviously gets caught being on the phone, not Corky, Violet gets caught being on the phone, and Caesar's, like you say, he redials.
Yeah.
And then when Corky, who picks up, realizes that Caesar, she hangs up, but Caesar keeps redialing, and the phone is ringing on the other side of the thin wall. We've already discussed the walls are thin.
Yeah.
Caesar keeps redialing, and you can just hear this phone ring, and I don't know why Corky, because she does eventually, doesn't just unplug the phone straight away.
Literally, I was screaming.
Yeah.
Screaming.
This is crazy. And then I will say, this is, I know you hate this word, but this line is my, I f***ing love it. When, you can cut this out, this is what I'm already cussing. Okay. When Corky and Violet are tied up, and then Corky wakes up, or like Violet wakes up, and Caesar's like, his head is right there in the camera, and he's like, wake up, you
Oh my god. Yeah,
it's so violent, but it's just so funny.
Yeah, I forgot that word was. Yeah,
but they use it themselves.
Yeah, when they use it themselves, it does. It's fine.
Exactly.
But then the one time Caesar uses it, you're like, "Hang on, no, that's not for you."
Mm-mm. Well, he's using it in an aggressive way, so.
Yeah, exactly. But when they use it to describe themselves, whatever, it's all good. Reclaim that word, baby. But he also says, "Your kind can't be trusted."
Yeah.
And I was like, what does that mean?
And
what does that mean?
He thinks what people think that Corky is, or like turned to Violet, that Corky did something to Violet to turn her like this.
Yeah.
He literally says, what does she do to you?
And she says, everything you couldn't.
This is the best line in the film.
That was next on my list. Oh. I was like, yes!
Everything you couldn't do, Caesar.
Oh my god.
It's
lesbianism.
She's so confident when she says it. I love it. Power moment. Power moment.
It's one of those moments on screen where you're like, I am so glad I'm a lesbian.
Right.
Because it's moments like that where you're just like, solidarity, sister.
Oh, yeah. Everything you couldn't, little mobster. It's excellent. I love it. It literally completely shifts the power from Caesar, who's holding the gun, by the way. And these ladies are tied up.
Yeah. Which is interesting as well, because in film, it's kind of, historically, this moment would be when he starts kind of tying them up and, like, threatening to chop their fingers off and stuff.
Yeah.
First of all, hands. Second of all,
this is why it's so jarring when he has that thing.
Yeah, you're like,
him.
No, not that one.
The garden shears are like around her thumb or her pinky. I don't know.
Yeah,
and it was so visceral. I was like, oh my god, if this is happening right now, I'm gonna throw up.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen.
But then, it's kind of historically in film. It's like, you know, lesbians deserve violence. This is the consequences to their lesbianism.
Yeah,
but I don't feel that in this film. I don't feel like that's not the tone.
No.
They're not trying to say that queer women deserve violence. They're trying to say, this guy is a psycho and he's not letting them just run off together.
This is it. Like, because he's already been established as a psycho.
Genius filmmaking. Genius. Yes.
He's already been established, but also Violet just took the power back by saying everything you couldn't do.
Yes.
So we are with them. Couldn't. We're not with him. Yeah. So his violence, we hate him for it.
We don't like his violence.
No.
Uncalled for and unnecessary.
Mm-mm. Yeah. How did they escape the situation? Does he get a phone call? Does someone show up? Oh, my God. I completely got the story wrong earlier. Because this is when he calls Miki to say that Gino's not showed up yet from the airport.
You just jumped the gun a bit earlier. It's fine.
Yeah, but Gino's just sitting in the bathtub, dead right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what happened. So he calls... So Caesar, to cover his tracks because he just killed the mob boss, calls Miki and says, Gino still hasn't shown up. Maybe he got popped on his way from the airport.
Yeah.
With the rival, I don't know, mob.
Yeah. Oh, Violet initially tries to help Caesar because she doesn't want him to die.
Yeah.
So she calls from the other room and pretends that Gino and Johnny have been in a car accident, and that's when Miki goes.
So Violet calls Caesar from the bathroom pretending to be Gino.
Yes, yeah.
Pretending that they're in a hospital because they were in a car crash.
Yes, so then Miki and bodyguard go.
Yeah.
And then the ruse fools Miki, who leaves for the hospital. Corky then tells Caesar that she has hidden the money in the next door apartment and he goes to retrieve it. Violet escapes and then calls Miki, telling him that Caesar stole the money and forced her to keep quiet. So that's what happens. So there's a chase between Violet and Caesar, during which time Violet's grabbed the phone and called Miki saying, he made me do it, you need to come back. Like, yeah. It was all a ruse, it's a lie. So he then, we know he's on his way back. And then, yeah, because that's the thing, because you think Corky would be the one that saves the day, but Corky's just like on the ground. And I thought,
Corky keeps getting knocked out. Yeah, like, honestly. She probably got like 5 concussions in one day.
Honestly, she gets knocked out like for half the film. So Violet holds Caesar at gunpoint. He's like, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. Again, I thought, the gun's on the floor. Maybe Corky's like, during this time, swivel around and get it. And then Violet's like, no, Miki's coming. You're done. You should run while you can. And then Caesar's like, no, I'm not doing that. You're not going to kill me. You're not going to kill me. And Violet goes, Caesar, you don't know shit. Shoots him f***ing dead. He falls in the paint, blood. On the ground. The red, the white, the black, all mixed together.
She's
and that's
a
it.
Badass bitch.
Caesar, you're full of
honestly, iconic. Oh, so
and then
good.
Miki, cut forward. Miki believes Violet's story, which again, which is what we said. That would... Miki liking Violet would come to her advantage because he doesn't question a thing.
Yeah.
And he thinks Caesar has just run off. Doesn't realise that Caesar is dead.
Yeah.
Miki's like, come with me. And then Violet's like, no, I need a clean break. And then he's just like, okay, drives off. And then they are in a brand new truck. Ooh, shiny, red and new. We assume they've got the money because obviously there's a new truck and they look... fly as hell, and then they drive off kissing.
Ah!
And that's it. That's how it freaking ends.
Can you believe that we get the blessing of an ending like this?
They drive off into the sunset. I'm sorry. What? This was under our noses the entire freaking time. Lesbians with a happy ending. Like, the whole time.
Thelma and Louise even had to die. And these two.
Literally.
Actual canonically lesbians.
I'm so proud of them. I'm so happy that they get that. I'm so happy that lesbians at the time got that. I'm so happy that we get to look back on that and be like, that was a turning point.
And
blessed.
It's so hot how...
Yeah.
Violet's incredibly intelligent, right? But she knows what her female power does.
Yeah.
And she just uses it to her smartest advantage to outsmart all these mob men. She's the innocent little, but she's the most powerful woman in this. Yeah. Like, she even has power of a Corky.
Yeah.
Like, she is the most powerful woman, and she just hides it because she knows what she can get with it. And
how smart.
That is women. That is hot.
Women run the world.
Oh, yeah. It's just hot. Yeah. Because you see, Caesar goes crazy when stuff goes wrong.
Yeah.
And Violet stays
calculated.
Cool and calculated, and she gets it done.
And that's how we win.
And she saves her woman, Corky.
Yes.
And Corky saves Violet's fingers. I will say,
blessings.
Corky literally gives up the location of the money to save Violet from getting her finger cut off. This is how Caesar is literally about to cut her finger off, and Corky's like, no, I'll tell you where the money is. And she tells the actual truth.
Yeah?
It's in the paint buckets. She literally saves Violet's fingers because, look, they're women. What's more important? Money?
Collaboration.
Or love?
Love.
Honestly, oh, so, so good.
I really, really, really love this film.
It has such a beautiful legacy, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, I just... It's crazy that this was released in the way that it was, that it was being, that it was able to be created.
I feel like in the 90s there was this little pocket of liberation for lesbian narratives. And then it kind of went back underground and indie for a bit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I love that there was that emergence, and I wish kind of more had followed suit.
Yeah.
Because then perhaps... it's just such an important film in queer history. Like, it's in all of the major queer documentaries.
Well, I think it's really interesting to look at the context of the films that came out at this time, right? Like, Bound is a mob film.
Yeah.
But I'm a Cheerleader is about gay conversion therapy. Then, like, the films that come out in the early 2000s are about lesbians discovering themselves, right? You have these contexts that don't seem threatening.
Yeah.
Like, you literally have gay conversion and you have mob. But what the filmmakers do with these films is they make them so good.
Yeah.
But you can kind of imagine the way that they're sold makes it kind of easy for them to be created.
Yeah, it doesn't look like how it is.
No, it completely subverts
your
whole idea of what it could be.
It's playing with a whole genre and making something new, which is what filmmaking makes filmmaking beautiful.
That's it. And then a bit later on, we get romance movies that are lesbian films, like Imagine Me and You.
Yeah.
But this wasn't necessarily subverting possible a bit earlier on.
Yeah.
So we get films like this that are incredibly well made, but the context they are sold under makes them easier to sell.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you could think about it like this. Like, this is literally a mob film. It just happens to have lesbians. And yes, they are a major part of the plot. They are the whole part of the plot. But you don't necessarily have to look at it like that. So that's what makes it easy.
And that's, again, like we talked about Brokeback Mountain last month. It's kind of a way of queer filmmakers and queer characters entering the mainstream in a clever way.
Yeah.
To attract an audience.
Right.
It's just so smart.
So smart.
And that's always what queer cinema has had to do.
Yeah.
To stay... Yeah, mostly in the periphery, but it's still there.
Yeah.
It's always there, and this is an example of a film that really transcends those barriers.
Yes, transcends, and God, this is made for gay, like, lesbians.
Yeah,
like, this is made for you and I, and all the queers out there. Like, this is literally made for us. There's not a second where I'm like, this feels a bit, like, male perspective or, like, palatable for a straight audience. Which,
I mean...
And it's not distasteful. It's so tasteful, but it's really through a queer lens.
I feel like the Wachowski sisters, they have such a unique and wonderful way of writing female characters. And characters in general. But we notice women more because we are women.
Yeah.
And we are gay women.
Rarer.
Yeah, and you're right. I look at that film and I'm like, yeah, that was made for me. And I really feel that. And it's so rare.
It's amazing.
Oh, blessed. Blessed to talk about this with you today.
Yes, very blessed. This is such a good film.
Yeah.
Couldn't recommend it more. Please watch it. It's not even that long. And this is the type of film that I could watch every day easily.
Oh, it just takes you back to a pocket in time. It's so nostalgic. Like, some of you listening will remember more of the 90s than we do, and it really feels like that.
Also, if you like leather, watch this film.
If you like women in leather jackets, watch this film. If you like women in lipstick in a lift, watch this film.
That the two scenes that I keep going back to when I like yesterday even, and the first time I watched this film, is the lift scene and the Do I make you nervous, Corky?
I mean, that is well established in gay, actually, anyway.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
It's the beginning. It's the first quote.
Iconic. I love that. That's so good.
Yeah. Happy days.
I love this. Look how happy we are. This is good.
I have a huge smile on my face. Yeah.
Exactly. It's hot, it's sexy, and it's just good representation. We love that.
Man.
I didn't know this film was 18 plus. Is it for the violence or for the sexual content?
Both, probably. Oh.
I mean, I didn't watch it before 18. I don't know. No. I'm sure it would have been fine.
I mean,
I was going to say,
we watched The L Word. I think we could handle it.
Yeah, that's way more graphic for sure.
Oh, hell yeah. Scarred for life. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this episode of Gay Actually as part of the UK Film Review Podcast. There are other series on this podcast as well. You have the UK Film Club with Chris and Brian. I recently got a shout out on one of their episodes for what snack I like to take into a cinema. You're going to have to listen to the episodes to find out what the hell that means.
Wait, tell me on a side.
That's
very peculiar.
I just told Joyce, I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to listen back to the previous episodes and find out.
Totally worth it, because I was shocked.
Hashtag what? So we also have the Phantom Zone, lovely people over there talking about all things sci-fi and nerdy. There's also the Scream Test. Woo! Horror.
No.
We also have our own channel, as I said before. We are Gay Actually on Spotify. You can search us. When you're listening to this, we've just done an episode on the new series of Heartstopper. So feel free to have a listen and tell us what you think. We are on Instagram at Gay Actually Podcast. Yes, that's right. I changed the handle. It is at Gay Actually Podcast. No space, no caps. And if you have any requests or collabs, you can DM us or you can email us at gayactuallyuk@gmail.com.
You're so professional at this. I love listening to you doing our outros.
That's very nice of you. Yeah. Everyone's going to think that's scripted. You just compliment me every time.
It's not scripted. Wait, do we look professional enough to have a script?
If you guys could see us right now.
I don't even have notes for this episode.
Thank you so much for listening to our conversation about Bound. Joyce, thank you for talking to me about it.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Aww.
It was really fun rewatching it.
It was a really random moment.
You've been wanting to do it for a while.
I'm really glad we did.
Stop it. Stop it.
All right. We're going to sign off. Take care, everyone. Stay safe. Have a lovely summer.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.